St. Red, My Aim is True by Jordan D. White. Episode 10, Pay It Back.
DINR workers scurried to and fro to avoid the hunks of flying glass thrown about as Red smashed Charles's car through the floor-to-ceiling glass windows and doors to their lobby. The car skidded, spinning to a halt, Red's door feet from the security desk. He launched himself out of the vehicle at the two shocked guards behind it. They were still ducking for cover from the glass when he reached them. His sword was already out and swinging, not cutting them, of course, but using the blunt hilt to knock them unconscious before they could do anything against him. He returned to the car, got the keys out of the ignition, shut the door, and activated the car alarm. "Make sure no one touches it, okay, guys?" he said to the guards. When Red and company had arrived back at the warehouse Father Patrick and his rabble had been occupying, after leaving Allison to her life of depression, Red felt numb all over his body. After shrugging off Father Patrick's concern and Kimmy's affections, Red locked himself in the room they decided was his. He didn't sleep. As he lay awake, he found the numbness slowly being replaced by a burning. Around 5 in the morning, he rose. He crept into Charles's room and took his keys. He left no note. About 4 hours later, he was at the same DINR location Argento had brought him to, in his underwear, 1 week before. The night he had arrived, he'd spent some time reading the materials given to him about the facility, which, in addition to ranking the on-site restaurants from best to worst, had also taught him where it was located. It was still in the process of growing light out when he arrived. His mood had not improved any from when he'd left the city. If anything, he'd grown angrier the more he thought about things. Hence, his choice of parking. The main lobby of the building was a large two-story room, with many hallways branching off from it, and twin staircases leading up to the second floor, where a balcony overlooked the whole area. Red ran up the stairs to his right. The day after Christmas or no, he knew there would still be work being done here. He wove his way through the corridors he'd been through only twice before, but he remembered the way well enough. Eventually, he came to a door with a full-length glass window labeled Gerald Hayden, Vice President, Conscription and Enlistment. His sword made quick work of shattering that window. Hayden's secretary, Georgie, jumped up from her desk in shock. She backed up into the corner.
Oh, God! He's back!
Red pushed his way past her to the door to Hayden's inner office. A corner of his mind noticed that they had finished the repairs as he brought up his sword again and slashed directly through the door, his sword leaving wedges gouged out of the wall on either side. A second swing brought the door to the floor. Red burst into the office and immediately sliced Hayden's desk directly in half, his sword swinging down right between the executive's legs. The two halves of the desk fell inward, spilling his computer, photographs of what Red assumed was his family, and other miscellaneous things upon the floor.
Jesus, not again. Listen, I finally got this furniture in earlier this week. Can we not destroy it this time? Please, just have a seat. We can talk about this.
Red looked around him. The office was much better decorated than last time.
Georgie, it's all right. Don't worry about this. Don't bother with security. Actually, just go grab us some coffee, would you? What do you take?
I'll pass.
Just for me, then. Thanks.
Hayden was still sitting behind his broken desk. He looked up at Red expectantly.
So what seems to be wrong this time?
What are you talking about? What this time?
When we went through this unpleasantness 2 weeks ago, Argento assured me it wouldn't happen again, but of course, I had my doubts, and rightly so. It seems because here we are.
2 weeks ago? But I...
Oh dear, you don't remember. I had assumed that you... Well, it appears I've said too much. What is it that you wanted, then?
What did you do to Allison? Why can't we bring her back?
Oh, that. From what I understand, Argento had noticed that Father Patrick's ability only healed away our most recent batch of memories. We simply implanted the same version twice. I'm afraid we can't have you bringing her back again. She has her place, and you yours.
Georgie returned, carrying a steaming hot cup.
Your coffee?
Thank you.
He took the mug from her and sipped it. As she went out to her desk, Hayden looked around.
You haven't left me anywhere to put this down, have you?
All of a sudden, the mug burst, sending hot coffee all over Hayden's lap. Hayden shrieked in pain and jumped up from his seat before he noticed that Red had shot the cup with his now silenced gun.
Jesus, be careful with that thing! That stuff's hot!
You're going to tell me everything, and you're going to tell me now. I might not be able to hurt you with these weapons, but there are plenty of other ways. Broken coffee mug, couple of nice picture frames, fancy tie you're wearing. You said we could talk, so have a seat. Talk.
All right. I suppose that sounds fair to me.
Hayden slowly returned back to his seat. "Oh, Georgie!" Red called. He saw her head peek around the doorframe in the office. "Take the rest of the day off, okay?" She quickly picked up her purse and left.
"The ball is in your court now, as they say. What is it you want to know?"
"That 2 weeks ago crap, what was that all about? I don't remember knowing you past a week ago." Hayden smiled and laughed under his breath. "What's so funny?"
"Red, you've been working for us for 4 years.
"What?"
"We recruited you right just after you finished high school."
But I remember going to college."
"Yes, and Allison does not remember you. Ironic, considering you were almost married."
"What?" "Look, you better cut the crap and tell me the full story, or so help me God."
All right. Here we go. We recruited you in the summer of 97. Since then, you've been partnered with Argento, working in the field of interventions, just as you are now. Your record was impeccable. 4 years of assignments and only 4 failed missions. Fortunately, nothing world-shattering, of course. The problem was your relationship with Allison."
"I don't understand. If I was working for you, wouldn't she have forgotten me?"
"No, because she was working here, too. That's how you met."
"You're telling me we didn't grow up together?"
"Not at all. You met her for the first time, I don't know, a month or so into your duties."
"What was she doing here? I mean, was she a saint?"
"No. Besides, you can't stop being a saint. You're on a one-way track to martyrdom. No, she was one of our prophets."
"Oh my God."
"Things making sense?" "She was the prophet who discovered you, in fact. It turned out there was some sort of connection between the two of you once you were aboard. Her prophecies were almost solely related to you and your missions. As soon as our Argento introduced the both of you, you became close. As time went on, you began to see more and more of each other. You officially started dating about 3 years ago, I believe."
"Allison and I?"
"Yes, it must be awfully exciting. The problem came just under a month ago when you asked her to marry you."
"What happened? What, are people not allowed to marry in the company?"
"Of course they are. Quite the opposite, actually. We're not allowed to marry anyone outside of DINR. My wife is a doctor down in the medical facility." "No, there would not have been any problem with it had Allison decided to not break protocol and go directly against our orders."
"What orders?"
"When she became your future wife, guilt began eating away at her. She found it increasingly hard to mislead you and eventually told you the truth about your conscription."
"And what is that?"
"When she first identified you as the next saint that we brought you in, you refused. We were unwilling to give up the life you had made up for yourself. Too many people you cared about, too many prospects for the future."
"But I didn't... Oh my God."
"Exactly. You had too much holding you to your life, so we rewrote your life. We took it all away from you and gave you a life you'd be much more willing to leave behind. We made you an outcast with more interest in memorizing works of literature than making friends. We gave you life without ambition, leaving you with little to no prospects. Then we just had one last thing to take away from you. Your parents."
Red's eyes widened. Then they narrowed.
"Wait. Now hold on a second. It's not like that. We didn't kill your parents."
"Then what did you do?"
"We just took them away from you."
"Then my parents are alive?"
"Well, yes. They're just not Mr. and Mrs. Kane. We found the Kanes who had died 8 months earlier, and when we gave you your new life, we made them your parents."
"Who are my real parents?"
"What difference does it make? The loving parents you remember are dead. That was no lie. Your real parents won't even remember you. It doesn't matter. The point is who they were. The point is your reaction. I imagine it's similar to what you're feeling now. That's what happened 2 weeks ago. She told you everything and you were outraged. You came smashing and slicing your way into here, destroying my entire office, demanding an explanation."
"And then what? You did it all again?"
"Basically. We took you to rechristening, gave you a college career. We couldn't have Allison waiting to refresh your memory when you came back, so she went with you to be returned to the outside world."
"Well, I don't understand. Why didn't you bring her back?"
"We didn't bring her back for a few reasons. First of all, sometimes there can be trace memories from previous life. When it comes to prophets, their abilities make them a bit more prone to getting senses or emotions from their previous memories. We didn't want to risk her remembering or somehow discovering what we'd done. Plus, prophets are a dime a dozen. Saints are rare. It was her or you. Of course, we chose you."
"Then why did you have us grow up together?"
"We didn't. At least not on purpose. Rechristening either an individual or of the collected memories is a miracle. We make happen what we need to. But a lot of it is up to him to sort out. I'm not really sure why he wanted you to know her, but he must have, hence the trouble when she forgot you.
So why not make me forget her again?
If it really is his will that you should know her, he'll find a way, no matter what we do. For now, we're more concerned with the consequence of her death.
That's another thing. What does she have to do with the end of the world?
That's what we need to find out. Just before the rechristening, Allison warned us with her final prophecy. She said that if she ever died, the apocalypse would be scheduled for less than 2 weeks later. And that's why we had to get her out of your way in memory. This is the apocalypse, Red. Someone needs to intervene. Someone like, say, the top agent in our interventions division. We need you out there helping to make things right, not lamenting your lost love and mistrusting your bosses.
So why are you so willing to tell me all this now? Hoping that I'll decide you're good and trustworthy just because you told me about all your lies after the fact?
No, I just figured, why not? You won't remember it for very long anyway.
He pushed a button on his watch, and 10 guards came running into the office, their guns, presumably not holy, trained on Red.
Drop your sword, please.
Easy, guys, easy, Red said, lowering his sword. He angled it downwards, trying to be subtle about the fact that he was actually sinking it into the floor. He quickly spun on his heels, cutting a circular hole in the floor around him. He and the circle immediately fell through the floor, smashing through the ceiling tile of the office below, much to the surprise of the office's occupant, now coated with broken bits of ceiling. Rolling with the impact, Red hopped up and out the door as he heard Hayden call out behind him,
"Hold your fire!"
Red ran to the office across the hall, luckily unoccupied, and slashed his way out the window, leaping out onto one of the grass lawns between buildings. He ran around the building back to the shattered front entrance where he had parked the car. The two guards he had knocked out were now fully conscious, presumably ordered to guard the car. They were standing near it, but must not have touched it since the alarm was not going off. Red sheathed his sword, pulled his gun, laid low near the broken entrance, and aimed up at a sculpture on the second floor balcony. He fired, shattering the bust to bits. The guard jumped to attention.
"Check it out. I'll cover you."
As the other ran up the left-hand stairs, the first one covered him with his weapon. Red crept up and slid himself under the car, trying to avoid cutting himself on the broken glass. He managed to avoid any serious wounds, but picked up a few minor ones. A cluster of footsteps entered the area.
"What's going on? Has he come through here?"
"We think he went that way. He knocked over that thing."
"All right, let's go. You two, stay close to the car."
Red heard the footsteps run off down the upstairs hall, and the guard came back down the steps. Red slipped his keys out of his pocket and watched their feet under the car. One of them walked towards the driver's side of the car to stand guard.
"Step away from the vehicle,"
Red said, attempting to make his voice boom as much as possible.
"This car is protected by Viper."
The guard's feet turned, startled.
"Crap!"
Red hit a button on the keychain, setting off the car alarm.
"Oh, crap! What do we do?"
the guard called, over the wailing.
"I don't know. I think we have to stay back from it."
Once they were a few feet away, Red turned off the alarm and shot his gun down a hallway off the main lobby. The bullet went through a door that was ajar, just a crack, pushing it closed as the bullet passed out of it.
"Jesus!"
one guard said, as both of them spun to face the door. The one near the driver's side moved toward the hallway. Red rolled out from under the car and threw open the car door. The guards spun to face him as he leapt within and started the vehicle. As he stepped on the gas, the guards each got off one shot. Both pierced holes in the windshield. One pierced a hole in Red's shoulder. He yelled in pain as the guards leapt out of the car's path. He drove down the hallway they had been facing, breaking off both side mirrors as he occasionally got too close to the walls. Up ahead and fast approaching was the end of the hallway, a large picture window set in a wall. Red floored it, and the car had very little trouble crashing through. The impact took the already weakened windshield out entirely. Red steered the car off the lawn and onto the main drag of the compound. Before long, he was speeding out of town on the interstate, which he found was surprisingly difficult without a windshield. He soon stopped at a rest area and felt really, really guilty about carjacking some professional-looking guy in a suit who parked a little further from the main building than he should have. The interior of the car was fairly bloody by the time Red pulled into the warehouse garage back in the city. As he drove up, the others all came out to greet him.
"Where in heaven's name were you? We thought you had betrayed us. Where did you go?"
"Hey, that's not my car."
Red opened the car door and fell out onto the floor.
"My God, what happened to you?"
"I was shot. Went to DINR. Had to find out about Allison."
"All right, lay still. This should only take a moment."
He kneeled down by Red's side, pulling off Red's jacket and unbuttoned his shirt, revealing the wound. He placed both of his hands on the shoulder and pushed down hard, causing Red to clench his teeth and growl in pain. The blood on his body soaked back up into the wound as the car seemed to miraculously clean itself. Red felt an incredibly strange sensation, which, glancing down, he realized was the feeling of his body pushing the bullet back out of him. Father Patrick grabbed it as it came loose from his skin, and the wound sealed itself off.
Souvenir?
No thanks.
So tell us what happened.
I told you. I went to DINR.
And?
And it turns out they're even more full of crap than you said. Oh, and they told me why you couldn't heal Allison. They double-dipped her in fake memory glaze.
That does make sense, I guess.
Yeah, it's great, except now we'll definitely never get her back.
Don't say that, Red. You'll find a way.
Great, thanks.
Come now, Your Holiness. What did they tell you? If we're on a team, you have to share things with us. There is no I in team.
I cannot believe that you just said something so incredibly lame. You're right. There is no I, but there is a me. And now that I mention it, there's also meat, mate, and Matt. So why don't you and your boy Toy go mess around on your bed and leave me alone?
You're not being fair, Red.
No, I'm not. But I don't give a crap. It's not fair that they've taken Allison away from me. It's not fair that they're trying to take me back and wipe my memory of her. It's not fair that they told me we were engaged 2 weeks ago till they decided to punish us. It's not fair that they took my parents and life away from me and made me a friendless orphan. And you know what? It's not fair that they leave me no option but to align myself with a psychotic pedophile with delusions of grandeur. But we're all just going to have to bite the bullet and live with it. You've got the bullet there. Bite it. Everyone was silent for a moment.
What about my car?
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm sorry about that. It's sort of dead. I drove through a few walls, and the windshield was gone, so I ditched it and stole this car. But, you know, this one's nicer anyway. It has a CD player. We just have to get new plates, I guess. Or paint it. Charles did not look pleased. You know what? Forget it. I don't care. I'm the one whose life was stolen from him, so too bad for you. I'm a saint about a million times more holy than this idiot you follow, so you can just celebrate that I even touched your stupid car and be happy I came back at all. Hell, we've got $5 million. Go buy a new car.
We have need for that $5 million.
Damn right you do. I'm going to need some new suits. This is the only one I've got, and it's got a bullet hole in it. Why don't you send the boys out to get me some? And why don't they pick up some Chinese food while they're at it? I'm starved.
Fine. Just settle down. Charles, William, take a few $100 from my room.
Sweet and sour chicken and some pork fried rice. No vegetables!
Why don't you get some rest? We can talk when you're ready. We'll come for you when the food arrives.
Great, thanks. Red went into his room and closed the door behind him. He threw his jacket in the corner, unbuttoned his sleeves, and began rolling them up. He lay back on his bed and stared up at the beams in the ceiling. After a moment, a quiet knock came at the door. Go away! The door creaked open and Kimmy crept inside. Did you not hear me?
Red, listen,
Get the hell out of here!
No, I've been trying to...
What? Are you saying no to me? I didn't think the word was in your vocabulary.
Just listen to me for one...
Kimmy, let me tell you something. There is nothing you can say that will get me to touch you. In fact, you sort of make me sick. Even if you are 18, I am a saint. I am blessed by God, or so they tell me. Who on earth do you think you are that you can just barge into my room whenever you please and say no to me when I tell you to get the hell out? Kimmy backed away from him slowly, tears forming in her eyes. Something about the way she smelled struck Red as being odd. All of a sudden, he found himself feeling guilty for making her cry. Her hand went up to her face and seemed to grab onto it, lifting it off. The image went blurry for a moment before resolving itself into Allison, holding a blank plastic mask, tears streaming down her face.
Nobody special.
End of episode.